The Ghost Goal Podcast.
Aston Villa officially announced themselves in this season's title race with a 1-0 win against Arsenal at Villa Park on Sunday, after beating Manchester City by the same scoreline earlier in the week. Meanwhile, Bournemouth recorded their first ever win at Old Trafford, demolishing Manchester United 3-0 on Saturday, and Liverpool came from behind yet again to beat Crystal Palace 2-1 late on. I'm Alex, here with Javier. Welcome to the Ghost Goal Podcast, episode 436. What did I tell you, Javier? You should have been worried about Villa Park. And here we are. Villa have announced themselves in the title race, as I mentioned.
And as you may have heard,
said it himself.
Yeah, fuck that intro, because in the title race, Alex, shit out of here. Let me just wrap that up in a little ball and get that shit out of here. Yes, Alex.
Before you go on your rant, Unai Emery, he told his players before that Arsenal game that if they win it, they will be officially be a part of the title race. And he said that again to the media afterwards. Did he really say that? And guess
that?
What, Javier? Do you want to know how many points Villa have after 16 games? You can just look at the table, but I can confirm it to you.
How many?
They have 35 points.
Wow, that's 35 very impressive, points. Alex.
The same number of points after 16 games that Leicester City had in 2015-2016. So never say never.
And how many did Arsenal have after 16 games last season, Alex?
I don't really care.
More than Aston Villa. So I think we had one draw and one loss at this point in the season. So it's irrelevant, Alex. You know that nothing at this point in the season matters. I mean, being at this point, at this, you know, echelon of the top of the table right now does matter, in the sense that, like, you're in it for top four. You're very likely going to be able to make top four this season if you keep up this pace, which right now Liverpool, Arsenal, Villa, and City. But there's teams like Spurs, United, and Newcastle, even Brighton, who are only, you know, 3 to 6 points out from behind Manchester City.
Javier, I don't know what more you want from Villa. Like, even before this week with the wins over City and Arsenal, they had been doing very well.
It was super impressive.
And honestly, we haven't been talking about them enough. But now that they've beaten last season's number one and number two teams in the table by the same scoreline, not conceding at all in either of those two games, outright dominating Manchester City in the first, then I think we have to put some respect on their names.
I put respect on Aston Villa's name. I mean, I had
well,
them,
I think you need to put
I
more respect on
I initially had them finishing
names.
Top four in our first prediction pod, and then after the transfer window finished, I had them finishing fifth.
You got spooked. You got
I did
spooked
get a
by
little
that
bit
Newcastle
spooked,
drubbing in the first game.
And I was, you know, if I had seen Sir Alex's interview after that game, which if you haven't seen, look it up, but he mentions after that 5-1 loss, when he's on, I think it's the NBC coverage, they ask him, like, who were you most impressed from just that first game week? We know it wasn't a lot, but who do you think impressed you the most? And of all the teams he goes to Aston Villa, and he says, you know what? They played some phenomenal stuff, but they lost 5-1. And he's like, that's how football is. And any given day, you know, a team can play great stuff and play well. But yeah, you're right, Alex. We haven't given Villa enough props. And I don't know if this is necessarily the game to give them props. I mean, it was the Manchester City game that was much more impressive to me. I think in this Arsenal game, they got very lucky. I didn't think Villa were that impressive, honestly. I thought they were good offensively on the counterattack. You know, they provided good threat, whether it was Diaby in the second half or Bailey in the first half. Both of them, you know, were really good on the ball and you know, were really dangerous and were able to link up play with Watkins. But defensively, I mean, they were playing this high line the entire game, and
the second half, they started to sit in more,
and we started to. Yeah, but they're not really. Even in the 70th and 80th minute, I was seeing them trying to play this high line.
But here's the thing. I thought as I was watching this, what impressed me was the totality of the past two games, of them being so committed to that high line in the Manchester City game. And then in this one, Yes, at least for like the first 20 to 30 minutes when they were on top and they got their goal and then they were the better team to start the first half, they were continuing that high line trying to, you know, get at Arsenal. Then as Arsenal started to threaten more and more through the game, we saw them, you know, revert more to what
the
we
game
were
was very
with,
back
Luna
and forth
Emery.
The first 30 minutes. They were not just like the clear better team.
Yeah, I mean, there was the Saka chance and then the Martinelli chip. But, you know, I'm saying in terms of
Martinelli,
like the way the game was going, it was more so Villa who were on top for the first part of that first half when they got the goal. I'm not trying
outside
to say
they of the goal,
you,
they had no other chances. They had one Douglas Luiz free kick, which was 20 yards out, which he put straight at the wall. And then
I'm talking about the way the game was
going. But there was no other chances. If you think of all the chances that happened in the game, there were two Odegaard sitters that he normally just buries, that one he puts straight at the keeper, the other one he puts wide. You talked about the Martinelli chip. Jesus had a couple of, you know, 1v1, a couple of very good situations where he could have passed the ball and he shot. We hit the woodwork. I mean, it was, I think, a great performance from Arsenal. There have been games before in the past where we've gotten results, namely the Chelsea one probably, where we shouldn't have gotten a result and we did. You know, this is one where it didn't go our way and we definitely should have gotten some sort of result. I think Villa look very, very good with the win here. I think they could have easily lost this game. And their tactics, it seems like it's very good against some of the other teams in the league, but I think we abused it. You saw Martinelli and Saka get in over and over and over again. Saka as well, I didn't even mention it, but he also had several chances, several 1v1s where he got past the defender and he just put the ball straight at the keeper, or, you know, the keeper made a fairly easy save.
I'm not recalling these several 1v1s. I can think of the chance he missed at the back post in the first half that
it was
Martinelli
especially
played
in the first half
that he missed.
He had so much space constantly to run into, and there wasn't always a midfield player trying to track him. And it felt like on another given day we would have scored 3 or 4 goals in this game. So, you know, good on Villa that Martinez had an amazing game. You know, I don't even think their backline played that well. I don't even think Villa played that well in this game, but they got the result. So credit to them.
So just to be clear, you're not backing Villa for the title.
No, absolutely
is that what I'm hearing
not.
Here?
They're not in the title race. They are.
I think after this week, week they have to consider themselves part of it.
But
you can't go through a week.
You can't tell me that you look at Unai Emery, right? That you look at Unai Emery, his body of work as a whole, especially after him being the Arsenal manager, Alex.
I'm not predicting.
I know how Unai is.
They need to start thinking.
Okay, but we did this as well. Like under Arsenal, like he went 21 unbeaten in the league. He had a phenomenal run.
He's sustained a better run of results, I think, in the year that he's been at Villa than what he did at Arsenal. He took over in November of last year from Steven Gerrard, a team that was, no joke, relegation form.
But it was a way
Gerrard.
Better team. We all knew it was, and we all didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, I know. I agree, but I'm just saying they were not performing to that standard, and he got them past that standard. If they were in 7th or 8th, if they were in the position Brighton are in right now, we would have said, oh, okay, a typical Unai job. He got this team back to where they're supposed to be. But they're doing leaps and bounds better than what anyone expected, and they're maintaining it. And it's obviously this is all behind their home form. I'm just saying, if I'm a Villa fan, if I'm part of that
I'd be super excited.
I don't think it's ridiculous for them to
not,
be thinking about themselves as title contenders.
No, they're not title contenders, man. Come on.
Again, Javier, you're not listening to, you know, how I'm prefacing this. I'm saying if you're them, if you're a Villa fan or player,
like we've
that's
seen,
what you should
we've
be
literally
thinking.
Seen, and like I'm not saying this as like a joke. We've seen teams like West Brom, Sheffield have similar point totals to Villa right now at this point in the season. We've all been like, wow.
Okay, when have we seen that? When have we seen West Brom and Sheffield have
we've
that?
Seen it.
There I
were,
guarantee
there was
you.
The, there was the season that West Brom finished like 7th or 8th, but they were in top four.
They didn't have 35 points after 16 games.
They were in top
Javier.
Four until December, and it was this. And
no,
it was the same
not.
Thing with Sheffield. The first season they came up under Wilder.
You're going to keep saying it with your chest, and I'm going to challenge you to find something proving that, and you're not going to be able to do it. So go ahead. We can take the time. I can edit it out. Fucking go for it, because that's a ridiculous fucking thing to say. 35 points after 16 games. Oh, you said they had similar starts. No, 35 points after 16 games, 2 points off the top of the table. No, that has not happened. Sheffield had a good start to the first season. West Brom had a good like first 2 or 3 months where they were, you know, near the top four, and then they promptly fell off. But like they weren't in this position. They didn't just beat Manchester City and Arsenal, like two teams that finished first and second the previous season, and have like a 15 game unbeaten run at home. That didn't happen. So I think you're saying you're going to respect Aston Villa, and you're trying to take credit for, you know, predicting them to finish in the top four in the preseason preview pod, which, by the way, you then reneged on when we revisited those picks at the end of the transfer window. But you're a hater, Javier. You're a hater, and you're just bitter that they beat Arsenal. And I told you it was going to happen. You know, I tried to warn you. I tried to soften the blow. And here we are, Monday afterwards.
All right, Alex. West Brom had 26 points in that season. They finished eighth, 2012, 2013.
Okay, so 9 points
and
off
at that
of
point,
this.
They had lost. Hold on. Yes, they had off. Lost three straight games. Then they went on to win.
Three
then they went on
more.
To go draw, win, win. So they so they had a similar points total after 19
not similar.
Games.
You're misunderstanding. You're misunderstanding
now, let's
the word
see how
similar
Villa
at
goes
this
for
point.
Villa. But all I'm saying is, Alex, teams have had runs like that.
You're a hater. We get it. You hate Aston Villa. That's fine. I mean, as long as you come to the realization and stop trying to convince yourself that you actually respect them, you're just frustrated that they beat you. And that's okay. You know, they're a good team. And I just want to get back to you before we move on. Something that makes me believe that they actually might... I'm actually fairly certain they could pull off like a Champions League finish in the league this season. Obviously less certain about them winning the league. I'll lean on Manchester City until it's mathematically impossible. But Villa, they do have the ability to play multiple systems. They can play their high line, and they can, you know, sit deep and do the classic Unai Emery defensive counterattacking system. And that's something that not many teams can pull off. I think there's been a time where Arsenal have been able to pull that off, but you know they've gotten more and more away from the sitting deep and, you know, defending against teams, and so have Manchester City. So I don't know. I like what they have going at Aston Villa, and I respect you, Aston Villa. All right, Javier. Any final thoughts on Arsenal before we move on to some of these other games over the weekend?
No. Again, I thought we played really well. I was happy with the performance. I wasn't happy with the finishing, but I think it's something that was not a problem last season. Seems to be at times a little bit harder this season, but that was always going to happen. And I think Kai Havertz is starting to pick up some of the slack. And I'm still really hopeful. I thought the performance was still really good. We just didn't get the result there, so. I'm not. If there had been a bad performance, or if we had had a similar performance to what City had against Villa, then I would have been very worried. But statistically, and what you saw in the game, it was just two completely different games. So I think we'll beat them at home at the Emirates.
Well, yeah, you thought you were going to win at Villa Park too. So
and we should have.
And Javier, I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you. You didn't mention any. Penalties that weren't given, or, you know, handballs that were given.
That's not
to
what
mattered.
What mattered was the chances we missed.
Yeah, I agree. That shows growth. I'm proud of you. Let's move on to Bournemouth. They went to Old Trafford and got their first ever win there against Manchester United, 3-0. I mentioned it on last week's pod, and I'm here to say I told you so. Manchester United are not good. Their fans shouldn't take anything away from that Chelsea win they had earlier in the week. We're just that bad. And Bournemouth proved me right in a big way. Honestly, it could have been 4 or 5-0. 3-0 was honestly probably the best Manchester United could have hoped for from this. They went behind 5 minutes in after Dom Solanke scored from a terrible giveaway from the Manchester United defense in their own third. And then Philip Billing, your own Philip Billing, Javier, one of your favorites. He popped up with a goal in the 68th minute, and then... Marco Senesi scored a goal off a corner in the 73rd minute to seal the result for Bournemouth. I want to focus less on, you know, how bad Manchester United are, because, you know, that seems to be what everyone turns towards when they have like a shock result like this. It's not even a shock at this point. And I want to instead heap some praise on Bournemouth, because we've talked about how they've improved their form over the last like month or so after an initially rocky start under Andoni Iraola, the new manager they brought in. I think they like struggled to win for the first month or so of the season. and we're only picking up draws here and there. Since then, they've, you know, beaten Manchester United away. They drew the aforementioned excellent
Hold on, Alex,
team
one sec.
At home.
Since then, they're level on points with Chelsea. That's all we got to say.
And, they're playing way better than us
continue,
at the moment.
Continue, Alex. Continue what you're going to say.
There's not many. You're not going to find many teams in the league right now that I would say Chelsea are better than.
But that's wild, because before we were literally talking about them, how they were so shit, and they're lucky that, you know, Luton, Burnley, and Sheffield are in the league, because they're not going to get relegated, because Luton, Sheffield, and Burnley. But earlier in the season, both of us were backing Areola. We were saying this Bournemouth team on paper. To be fair to them, they've had some really bad injury problems. Players like Lewis Cook, haven't really been a part of a team and have come back into the team, have been a big part of the team. We already know about Solanke, but he's been healthy all season. He's been the best player for them, but he's been starting to produce goals. Marco Senesi, he also started, I think he's just recently come back into the team. I know he was in it.
He's got a couple goals
He started at the beginning of the season. He's had a couple of nibbling injuries, but he just started getting back, healthy, playing 90 minutes for them. He's a big player. He's, gotten a couple goals for them, like you said. So, their team's developed a little bit, and I think they're going to be comfortably outside of relegation now. I mean, now that Everton as well have kind of been dragged into the relegation, it feels like they have a little bit of a cushion with this 19 points, the way they're playing. They just need a few more wins from teams below them, and they should be safe. But a big performance in the middle of the season for them.
And they brought in Iraola so that they wouldn't even be in a relegation battle. He's a manager that in La Liga had Rayo Vallecano finishing mid to upper mid table most of the time, with a very specific style that he's taken parts of in that defensive counterattacking system he had there. And he's updated it and molded it to these players. And it is more of a front foot attacking style now. And you saw it with that first goal, the press. I mean, United were terrible for it to allow Lewis Cook to cut out that pass out from the back. But they didn't let up. Bournemouth didn't let up in their press for most of this game. Yeah, they had moments where they would sit off and sort of conserve their energy for a bit to prepare themselves to push high again in certain spots in the game. But they picked their moments excellently. And as I was watching this, I don't want to bring everything back to Chelsea, but it just made me ashamed as a Chelsea fan that we couldn't commit to that style of play and execute that style of play to the same degree as Bournemouth. Bournemouth had it perfectly laid out, knew exactly when they were going to trigger their press and which players they were going to attack. Scott McTominay, for one, went from being man of the match in midweek to pretty much a passenger in this game, giving the ball away at multiple points, including
United
not
had a
going
bunch of chances though,
first
Alex.
Goal.
I mean, again, Martial was abysmal.
They had some chances.
Garnacho got four or five great opportunities, cutbacks, byline. I mean, I thought Garnacho was excellent, but just didn't really get that end product. I thought Bruno missed a couple chances, but he was, looked a little bit tired. I thought Amrabat was okay. It's good that they have Luke Shaw back, but yeah, again,
Harry Maguire was excellent,
I thought, which is weird considering they lost 3-0
and he's a defender.
Maguire's their best player right now. Is that insane to say?
Yeah, I mean, who else are you going to say? McTominay, maybe?
Again, I really don't know who their best player is right now, but it feels like it's Harry Maguire. When I watch the games, I'm impressed with Harry Maguire the most, what he's doing. I never thought I would ever really say that, but it seems like he has a greater redemption arc than Xhaka at this point. He's starting to make the universe redemption arc. So we'll see if Harry Maguire can bring it, bring it around and bring them a Europa title. Drop down.
I think they'll be lucky to get into the Europa League at this point. You have to finish third in your Champions League group to drop down into Europa. But we'll see. We'll know by Wednesday, I think. Yeah, it's not going to get any easier for Manchester United. They have Bayern Munich at home in a must-win game in the Champions League to try and pull off a miracle and qualify out of that. And then this weekend, Sunday, 11:30 a.m., they're going to Anfield to play a Liverpool team that just came from behind yet again to beat Crystal Palace 2-1 over the past weekend. Let's take this opportunity to just do way too early previews. What are you thinking for this Liverpool-Manchester United game? And do we get a repeat of that 7-0 from last season?
I don't think so. I mean, I think Manchester United have become, especially in these big games, a little bit more compact, a little bit more on the counterattack. I think Rashford hasn't played a big part. He's been kind of frozen out of the team by Ten Hag. You know, I don't know if that's sustainable with the results that Manchester United have been having. But that was their seventh loss of the season in the league. You know, eight wins and seven losses for Manchester United is just, that's horrific to me. You know, you're never getting top four, probably not even going to get Europa League, which is not acceptable for Manchester United. So I think Ten Hag might have to gamble here and try to play Rashford. Martial didn't work in the last game. He didn't play Højbjerg either. I think Højlund. But yeah, no, I don't know where you go for Manchester United right now. You know, if Ten Hag doesn't, I don't know what's going on with Varane. There's a lot of things behind the scenes that a lot of people don't, including myself, really know what's going on with Manchester United, and it's hard to predict what results they're going to have. And for Liverpool, I mean, at home, they've been unreal so far this season, so.
Yeah, I think everyone's leaning towards a Liverpool win. I wouldn't go as far as to say that they repeat that 7-0 against United from last season. But four or five? Yeah, I mean, if Bournemouth themselves could have had four or five against
Manchester United. I think we'll see a reaction from United. So I'm going to say, because Liverpool defensively, they really haven't been there these last few games. I know Kelleher got a clean sheet in the game before, but how many chances have Liverpool been giving up, you know, with Alisson in the team? I know he's back, but they've just, defensively, they haven't been there this season.
Yeah, but Alisson back, you know, he kept them in that Crystal Palace game. Palace could have been
exactly
up 1-0
so,
multiple
I don't know.
Points.
I'm going to say 2-1
Liverpool.
He makes
that defense.
But I think it's a close game, and I think United get a goal.
Okay, I'm going to say 3-0 Liverpool. Manchester United in the Champions League, they've been pretty free scoring, and players like Højlund have done well in that competition. But
so
he's
United
yet to
don't
score, in the
score
Premier
for
League.
Two straight games with the teams they have.
Right. I mean, they might, or probably will score against Bayern Munich in midweek this week. But I think the disappointment of, you know, going out of the Champions League will just compound their misery, and they'll go to Liverpool. I mean, also Bruno Fernandes, he's going to be suspended from this one with too many yellow cards accumulated. That you said he looks tired, but that's still a big loss for them creatively. So
I was going to say, it might be a blessing in disguise. We'll see.
Maybe, yeah. God, how crazy would that be if they end up being without Bruno and Rashford? Maybe not without. Maybe if they end up freezing out Bruno and Rashford. Those are two of, you know, the best attacking players from their team last season.
Ten Hag's done big things like that before, you know.
Sure.
He's made big decisions, and I think with the Rashford one, you know, the last win they got kind of vindicated him a little bit, and in this one he doesn't look vindicated, so he's kind of got when he's put his balls on the table so far, it's worked out for Ten Hag, so I want to see if he produces again, because I've been impressed so far with Ten Hag. I know he's been under fire a lot at Manchester United. I don't think a lot of the circumstances and a lot of the results have been his fault. I think there's been a lot going on behind the scenes that are not his fault, and he hasn't necessarily been backed to what he should have gotten to, I think, the stature of manager he is. So I think there's yet to be seen more from Ten Hag, and if United back him, they'll reap the rewards eventually. So I want to see if he does something here. This is a big game to try to turn things around for United.
And the thing we haven't mentioned yet, I know you said their record. They've got 9 wins, 7 losses
nine,
in the Premier League this season. They're only 3 points off Tottenham in fifth. And honestly, it's kind of been a little bit remiss by us to not mention this before, but the Premier League may be getting an additional Champions League qualification place. Fifth place may get you Champions League next season by the end of this season, depending on how, you know, teams like Arsenal and Manchester City and then, you know, West Ham, Aston Villa, Liverpool, Brighton in the Europa League and Europa Conference League, how those teams do in those competitions could give them the points. I forget what the term again for
Coefficient.
That's it. To have the Premier League maintain that first place coefficient in terms of the European leagues, and qualify them for another spot with the expansion of the Champions League next season. So no decision about Ten Hag's future is going to be made until it looks like it's impossible for Manchester United to qualify for Champions League, and that's. It's nowhere near that. It feels bad because they have no draws in the league at all, and they have 7 losses. But they're 3 points behind Tottenham, who are just themselves coming off a 4-game, run where they didn't win at all and lost 3 of those 4 games. So let's get to that Tottenham team, because they did get back on track with a 4-1 win against Newcastle. A fellow Champions League hopeful for next season. Did you get to watch this game, and are Tottenham back? Or have they put that dreadful chapter of 4 or 5 games behind them, and everything's fine at Tottenham now?
No, but I think Richarlison was, a big kind of found himself in this game a little bit. I know his goals were pretty easy to score, but him getting a couple goals and getting into the game has to be big for Tottenham, because he hasn't been around at all this season, or really at all. For Tottenham at all
since signing,
I think he's one where if he can ever get going for them, that'd be huge. I mean, a brace for them is more than he's ever done for them, so who knows. There's a vacuum right now with James Maddison gone that needs to be filled, and if Richarlison can provide creativity and provide goal scoring, then I don't know, maybe in this Tottenham team can find its gear again. And Son was excellent again, as always, but actually took, I know he needed a penalty to score his chance, but he got a couple of assists in this game as well, and I thought he was excellent.
I was going to say, it felt like to me watching that Son was took over his previous role as more of a creative wide player, with Richarlison playing centrally. Son is not obviously the same player as James Maddison, but you could tell that had been talked about in the dressing room, where they needed someone to take over the creative aspect of the game alongside Kulusevski, and if Son was going to be the player to do that, then they needed Richarlison to step up and get the goals instead, where Son had previously been making more of those central runs. And Son, especially for the first goal, Udogie's goal, well, the first two really, he set up Richarlison with the cutback, but Son was excellent on the byline to set up Udogie for that first goal. And I'm not going to say Tottenham are completely fixed, but it helps that they had their preferred midfield of Bissouma and Sarr back at the base of midfield. And then they had Romero, obviously, back, and he almost got himself sent off again. So he probably needs to be a bit more careful with those terrible challenges.
There was also an incredible I've made fun of him, on the pod in the past, but Davies was playing center back, and I think the game was still 0-0 at this point, but Newcastle got in behind.
Oh, the clearance?
Yeah, the clearance.
That went Davies off Isak?
Yeah, I mean, it was basically just like a tiny little touch that veered the ball from a tap-in from Isak back post. But yeah, an incredible clearance. One of the best so far this season that I've seen. If you haven't seen it, look up, Davies's clearance or touch that he had.
It was the first half 0-0, and Gordon got played in behind on the left wing all by himself. Frankly, could have gone for it himself, but instead tried to square for Isak. And Davies dove in to clear it and did so successfully, but it was one of those ones that you think 9 out of 10 times it could have just been an own goal.
Right.
Yeah, so it's always impressive when you see a defender, take the risk and it pays off for them. But you have to do it when you're in that position. It's just something as a defender you're tasked with doing.
People don't realize, but that type of play, it's literally like as important as scoring a goal, if not more important.
Yeah, so absolutely. All right, Javier, are there any other games coming up this weekend you want to maybe preview a little bit? I think I just want to mention the Chelsea-Sheffield game. I know that's not like a barn burner in terms of, two teams excelling in the Premier League at the moment.
It was a team above you in the table, technically, dominated a mid-table shit team. I mean,
Once again, you're not listening to me. You're on autopilot. I said previewing the Chelsea-Sheffield game.
Oh, sorry, Alex.
Yeah,
exactly. I was just
proving my
taking
point
a dump
from earlier
on Chelsea, but
when
I'm
we were
sorry,
talking
I,
about
I was,
Aston Villa and Chelsea. You see what I have to put up with here, listeners?
But why would you want to preview a relegation 6-point?
I
mean,
you're going to like
Chelsea-Sheffield. Oh, okay.
You're going to like it. I'm previewing it because I think Sheffield are going to win.
No.
Chris Wilder. Do you remember the name?
Stop, Alex.
He's back. In his second game.
He needs more time, Alex.
He got Sheffield a win at home last weekend against Brentford. A beautiful goal from Manchester City loanee James McAtee. Get him in the Ireland team with a name like that. Lovely goal. Contender for goal of the month for December. I'm telling you right now, with our current form and our home form overall, Sheffield are going to come to Stamford Bridge, frustrate the shit out of us, and walk out 1-0 winners. I haven't checked any of the lines for it yet, but Andrew, if you're listening for the Plus Money Pod, you got to give out Sheffield to win. None of this draw bullshit. Pick Sheffield to win. We're that dire at the moment. So that's all I'll say about that. Anything else coming up this weekend? Do you want to, you know, give a mention to maybe that Brighton game?
Sanchez actually out. Like, is Reece James got hurt again? Yeah, it's some garbage. Cole Palmer had a bad game. You don't want to talk a little bit about Chelsea, Alex? You always seem to be like just pushing it down, not wanting to talk about the players. Thiago Silva didn't play last game. It felt like that may have been. Did you think that was the right or the wrong decision? I think it got sabotaged a little bit by the Reece James injury, Alex. I mean, again, like there's a lot of things happen in this game. You don't want to talk at all about the game. You're done with Chelsea.
I'll never be done with Chelsea.
You're just going to talk about them in a vacuum and not about the like game at all?
They're like that toxic ex that you just can't get away from. You just keep going back to them.
Are you excited to see Petrovic in goal maybe, Alex?
They keep sending the you up text at 1 o'clock in the morning and you keep just answering it when you should just go to sleep. We don't have the time to talk about all of Mike Chelsea thoughts. How about this, Javier? When Sheffield come to Stamford Bridge and beat us, we'll do a giant, you know, what's wrong with Chelsea segment next week.
If that happens, Alex, I will congratulate you because that's a God call if that actually happens. Yeah. I don't think it will.
It's
you're going to win like 3-0 and you're going to be like, I was just kidding.
Javier, step into the kitchen. The people need your fantasy takes after you skipped it on the last bonus pod that we did. What should the fantasy competing listeners be doing this week?
So there's a few topics I kind of want to talk about. I don't necessarily want to talk about picks, even though I might talk about a couple of good picks in this one. The first one is Erling Haaland apparently has a foot injury. We don't know how serious it is yet. You know, they're saying it's like a stress to the foot, which apparently couldn't walk the day after the game, but that's why he didn't, you know, even travel to this Luton game. He wasn't on the bench. Kind of came out of nowhere, so foot injuries are kind of tricky. We don't know how long that's going to be. I've seen, you know, a lot of people are transferring him out, so I would hold on to him for a week or two, you know, because if you sell Erling Haaland, you're going to have $14 million in funds to redistribute in your team. If you buy a couple of players, it's going to take a lot to get him back in, and you're going to want to get him back in, so I would wait a week or two on selling Haaland if you're thinking about that. The other one a lot of people are selling, including Alex, who just told me he did, is Kieran Trippier. I'm thinking of selling him as well. You know, Newcastle, defensively, they don't have Pope anymore, who was a big reason of why they kept clean sheets. So that like avenue of points for Trippier is gone. There's still a lot of the offensive output for Trippier, but I don't know if the occasional assist in goal is worth, you know, almost
I was gonna say,
$7 million in defense. So
I haven't even been seeing the same attacking output from him because the Newcastle have so many injuries and have been forced to play the same 11 for, you know, weeks.
He looks exhausted now. Every game, right?
He looks exhausted. He's made big mistakes like the first two goals in the Everton loss and, you know, got cooked multiple times by Son in the Tottenham game. I was watching that after the Everton loss, like very specifically thinking this is Trippier's, you know, trial to stay in my team, and he failed it. Still a very good player if they have the, you know, the squad to rotate him a little bit and keep him fresh, but it's just not the case at the moment. That's why I dropped him.
So as a you know, change to that, it looks like Livramento, who's I think 4.4 million, is a really cheap in until Newcastle's defense. He's a player now who, with Trippier, you know, probably needing some rest, and with Dan Burn,
they've got free scoring Fulham coming to St. James's Park. Yeah. Though
we'll see what happens.
16 goals in their last four games.
Yeah, remember Alex when you said on the pod that Fulham don't know how to score any goals and they've doubled their goals.
I stand
scoring
by it because at the time, 12 since games then? In, they had 10 goals total in the season when
they
I said that.
16 since then,
and now they've exploded
more
with
than
16.
Chelsea.
So If you want me to tell or to say that your team can't score goals for a price, I can be bought.
Is Raul Jimenez back, Alex?
Yes, and I'm happy for him.
He's the one that I have to mention now, guys. He's 5.3 mil. He has, you know, 3 goals in his last 2 games. I know it's, you know, Nottingham Forest and West Ham, but Fulham have just won their last 2 games 5-0. And, you know, Raul Jimenez has been a big part of that. He got a goal also against Villa earlier. So it's not like he only scores against bad teams. And this Fulham team's been getting a bunch of goals, like Alex
said. Also, West Ham are a good team. Anyway, talking about them in the same conversation as Nottingham Forest, West Ham beating them 5-0 is impressive.
Right, and, you know, Newcastle away is not the best fixture, but it's, you know, like Alex said, they're a very thin team, kind of good time to play them right now. Then they have Burnley at home, Bournemouth away, you know, Arsenal, that's a hard fixture, but then Chelsea, Everton, Burnley, Bournemouth, so a really good run there. So if you want to get some Fulham players, which I don't think I've ever recommended throughout the season, it looks like, you know, Raul Jimenez at striker, 5.3 mil would be a good one to get. And maybe Willian as well. He's been getting a lot of goals and assists. I think he's on penalties as well for Fulham. So if you want Fulham's penalty taker, Iwobi as well. He's 5.3 million. Andreas Pereira, also 5.3 million. Both of them are midfielders. Oh, and even Willian, 5.3 million. So all the Fulham midfielders are 5.3 million. If you want to get into a free goal scoring team, look at one of those players, Oro Jimenez, all cheap options to get in fantasy. And then I haven't mentioned him. It's weird that Wolves players keep popping up in this because we were talking about Wolves having problems goal scoring early in the season. Pedro Neto is coming back soon. You know, he's been rumored to come back the last week or two. But Matheus Cunha, he's now got, you know, 3 goals and 2 assists in his last 5 games. He's returned in his last 5 straight games. You got to think, even with, you know, and those games included Arsenal, a goal against Arsenal and an assist against Tottenham. You got to think that even when Neto comes back, that Heechan, Cunha, Neto front three, Cunha's going to keep producing. He's only 5.7 mil. Seems like there's a lot of really good cheap strikers that are suddenly coming out. And, you know, the run of games isn't ridiculous. They have West Ham, Chelsea, Brentford, Everton, Brighton, United, Chelsea, Brentford. So they play a lot of similar teams over and over again, but a lot of mid-table teams, games where they can get a lot of goals. So I would look at players right now that can get a lot of goals. There isn't going to be a lot of clean sheets in the next couple of months. The games are coming thick and fast, so don't think too much about defensive outputs. I would think more about offensive outputs and go with value players, because players that like Haaland and Salah are amazing, but Salah's going to African Cup of Nations. If Haaland gets hurt, it's a lot of money that you're not putting into use in your team, so always think about that.
All right, Javier, thanks again for your fantasy input. Much appreciated. If you want to follow Javier on Twitter, now known as X, you can do so at JavierRev9. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ASMoss92. And you can follow the podcast at GhostGoalPod. Enjoy the last round of Champions League fixtures this midweek and the Premier League this coming weekend. And until next time, see you.